From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Patriots and Traitors, that's T-R-A-D-E-R-S. Ralph Nader stands next to the statue of George Washington on Wall Street and calls for the New York Stock Exchange to be taken off corporate welfare. We'll take a tour through the website on the Commission on Presidential Debates. Also, a look at the foreign policy of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. And a Chinese leader is sued in New York over death stemming from the Tiananmen crackdown. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. This on the front page of the Washington Post today. Concerned about a possible threat from Iraq during the U.S. presidential campaign, the Pentagon yesterday alerted an Army Patriot anti-missile battery for possible deployment to Israel. This according to defense officials. The unannounced action was taken in response to concerns that Iraq could try to fire ballistic missiles at Israel, the officials said. The unit alerted is the 69th Air Defense Artillery Brigade based near Frankfurt, Germany. Administration officials were extremely reluctant to provide any details about the possible move of the Patriots, which are guided supersonic surface-to-air missiles designed to intercept enemy aircraft and missiles with high explosive warheads. The Washington Post goes on to say the United States has previously sent Patriots to Israel, but only in times of crisis. A Patriot battery consists of 8 launchers and 64 missiles, but it is not clear that a full battery would deploy. During the 1991 Persian Gulf War, 39 Iraqi Scud missiles were fired at Israel, and the United States dispatched Patriots to Israel for the first time. The Patriots failed to stop the Scuds, many of which damaged neighborhoods in and around Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak today said he saw no reason for concern that Iraq might attack Israel with missiles during the coming months, but said the government is monitoring the situation. Iran's parliament speaker has met representatives of Chevron, Conoco, and other U.S. oil firms and demanded an end to U.S. sanctions against Iran. The meeting was held in New York, where the Iranian official, an ally of President Mohammad Khatami, is visiting to attend a world gathering of parliamentary chiefs at the United Nations. The U.S. oil company reps were quoted by the official Iranian news agency as saying the public opinion polls have shown that 77% of the people and almost all foreign policy experts in America have expressed hope that the U.S. sanctions against Iran would be lifted. U.S. oil companies have been denied the chance to invest in Iran's oil and gas riches since President Clinton enacted a unilateral U.S. embargo 5 years ago. Republican vice presidential candidate Dick Cheney and his former company Halliburton are among those leading the charge against the sanctions on Iran. 5 veterans of the 1989 Tiananmen Square democracy movement are suing Li Peng, the chair of China's National People's Congress, in a federal court in New York for human rights abuses stemming from his role in the military crackdown that killed hundreds of civilians in Beijing. The civil suit was filed on Monday in federal district court in Manhattan by the Center for Constitutional Rights and was served on Li Peng, or security around him, last night. Federal regulators say they are now looking at reports of 88 deaths and more than 250 injuries related to failures of Firestone tires fitted to sport utility vehicles and light trucks. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration also said it now had more than 1,400 complaints of tread separations, blowouts, and other problems, up from 750 complaints, 62 deaths, and 100 injuries when it released figures 2 weeks ago. Meanwhile, in Venezuela, where Ford started offering replacement tires in May, that nation's Consumer Protection Agency yesterday recommended criminal charges against Bridgestone and Ford. That agency, Indesu, blamed inadequate suspension and weak tires for high-speed blowouts that it linked to at least 46 deaths on Venezuelan roads. We'll have more on that story later in the show. Here in the United States, Firestone faces a midnight deadline to avert a strike by 8,000 workers. And the U.S. Navy is trying to soothe tensions on the Puerto Rican island of Vieques. It's offering jobs and other economic perks to locals who will vote on whether the Navy can keep its bombing range on the island. Nearly 100 people came to a meeting at the Vieques Country Club, where Navy officials in civilian clothes encourage residents to sign up for short-term jobs. The work includes moving an ammunition supply depot from one end of the island to the other. The majority of residents of Vieques are opposed to the U.S. Navy presence.
I've got to find another tax loophole for those rich donors before Bush's next fundraising dinner.
Going to need more campaign cash in November. How can I make the Democratic platform even more corporate friendly?
I know.
What if?
Hey, you got Democrat in my Republican.
Hey, you got Republican in my Democrat.
Not much difference, actually.
Yeah, two bland tastes that almost taste the same.
Paid for by billionaires for Bush or Gore. We don't care who you vote for. We've already bought them. Billionairesforbushorgore.com.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, standing on the steps of Federal Hall. On this site, in Federal Hall, April 30th, 1789, George Washington took the oath as the first president of the United States of America. Above me is the statue of George Washington, and there's Ralph Nader, Green Party presidential candidate, looking across the street at the New York Stock Exchange, saying the New York Stock Exchange should be taken off corporate welfare. Let's take a listen.
That will be avoided. Bush and Gore will not discuss the need to crack down on corporate crime, fraud, and abuse that's so often reported in the major newspapers in our country, like the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. They will not try to end corporate welfare as we know it. They will not cut out the waste in the military budget, which is enormous, and which an Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration says could be cut by $100 billion and make the military budget more lean and mean. They will not really and seriously go for public financing of public campaigns, although they talk about it rhetorically. They will not protect the consumer. They will not get rid of restrictive labor laws that keep tens of millions of American workers making a non-living wage under $10 an hour, many of them $5.25, $6, $7, $8. These and other issues, including the World Trade Organization issue and NAFTA, are examples of why we need a progressive new party, the Green Party, in this country. Why we need, after a long period, a party that truly is of, by, and for the people, not just based on its statements, but based on our 37-year long record of fighting for more responsive government for workers, consumers, taxpayers, and the environment, and making sure that these corporations represented here at the New York Stock Exchange behave themselves, that they become responsible, they obey the law, they don't violate your health and safety rights, and they don't defraud you. I think it's very important to note that a lot of people in this country will vote for a new political party if they think other people will. And that's what we have to do in terms of breaking through, because the political system is rigged by Tweedledum, Tweedledee, Republican, Democrat, that are morphing into one corporate party with two heads wearing different makeup. They command the money. They command the media, these two parties. They command the barriers to entry for third parties that are very difficult on the state-by-state level. And they also command our expectations. We have to have, in this country, millions of people who vote their dreams, not their fears, who vote their legitimate interests, not their betting odds. And we have to do what the people in Oregon did a few days ago, pour out in support of the Green Party candidacy of Nader LaDuke, filling the Coliseum in Portland with 10,500 people who didn't come for any rock bands, which were not there, and didn't come for the food, which wasn't there. They came to hear and participate in the politics of joy and justice. And so I say here today, get the New York Stock Exchange off welfare, get it back on its own feet, and start the movement across the country from this bastion of capitalism that was intending to feed on the public trough. Let the movement swell all over the country of ending the hundreds of billions of dollars of corporate subsidies, handouts, giveaways, and bailouts that only make the rich richer and drain away important tax dollars for the needs of the many in our country. Thank you.
Green Party candidate, presidential candidate Ralph Nader, standing on the steps of Federal Hall where George Washington first took the oath of office as the first president of the United States in 1789. And as we stood there and looked across the street at the New York Stock Exchange, it wasn't too hard to tell the patriots from the traitors. That's T-R-A-D-E-R-S.
Excuse me, Ralph Nader was just on the corner saying that the stock exchange should be taken off corporate welfare. What do you think about that?
No comments.
Can I ask you a question? Ralph Nader was just here saying the stock exchange should be taken off corporate welfare. What do you think about that?
I would have no comment. I wouldn't know anything about it.
Excuse me, Ralph Nader was just here saying the stock exchange should be taken off corporate welfare. What's your comment on that?
I don't understand what he means.
That the corporation shouldn't keep getting welfare from the state, tax breaks, etc.
I have no comment.
Excuse me, what company are you in?
Ralph
Nader was just here saying that stock exchange should be taken off corporate welfare. What's your comment on that?
I didn't realize corporate welfare existed. Thanks.
Well, the kind of tax breaks that go to large corporations in this country.
I don't work for a large corporation.
What is Smalls McKenzie?
It's not a large corporation.
It's one on the stock exchange.
No.
Can I ask what you think of Ralph Nader, who is just here?
I'm sorry. We're not allowed to talk to the press or anything.
You're with Goldman Sachs?
Yes. Uh-huh. Sorry.
Okay. Hi. Can I ask what you think of Ralph Nader being
here? One way or the other.
What do you think of him saying that stock exchange should be taken off corporate welfare?
I, no comment. I have nothing to say.
You're with Fleet Special. You're a Fleet Specialist.
Traders across the street from Federal Hall outside the New York Stock Exchange before Ralph Nader left after his whiz tour through New York. By the way, there were signs by people holding them while he was speaking, saying he should come to Harlem. I asked Ralph Nader about the presidential debates.
What should the networks do about the Presidential Commission, Debate Commission's exclusion of you in the debates?
The networks should sponsor their own debates. They're big enough to sponsor debates, four-way debates, in order to make sure the American people do not fall asleep in front of the television set watching the drab debate, the dreary. If the networks want high ratings, the way to get it is with a four-way debate. And they can bypass the Presidential Debate Commission, a private company created by two parties to exclude competition.
The commission says they're nonpartisan.
No, the commission is bipartisan. It basically was created by the Republican Democratic parties. They share the co-chairmanship. They're funded by beer, tobacco, and auto money. And they have, ever since they let Ross Perot on in 1992, have determined to exclude all other significant third-party candidates from the presidential debate. So they are not nonpartisan, they are bipartisan.
Has any network invited you into a four-way debate?
Not yet, but I hear something's churning inside ABC.
Do you think the network should refuse to cover the Presidential Debate Commission's debates?
No, I think they should open up the debates on their own with four-way debates and expand debates. And that way it'll put the pressure on the Presidential Debate Commission maybe to break loose and allow significant third parties in.
Ralph Nader speaking yesterday on Wall Street. Yesterday on Democracy Now, we had a chance to talk with the executive director of the Commission on Presidential Debates, which will conduct the first debate between George Bush and Al Gore on October 3rd in Boston. They have set the bar for anyone participating in that debate as 15% in 5 national polls a candidate has to have before they can participate in the debate, which does exclude the third-party candidates. At the end of the interview with Janet Brown, we asked her how people can give comment to the Commission on Presidential Debates about the criterion that has been set. Thank you for being with us, Janet Brown, Executive Director of the Commission on Presidential Debates. If people want to contact you about their feelings on who gets to participate, where can they call and where can they email?
If they go to the website, they can get all the information. There are multiple phone numbers, faxes, and email addresses right there.
Well, we went to that website. Democracy Now! Producer Jeremy Scahill took a tour of the website of the Commission on Presidential Debates.
Let's go to the Commission on Presidential Debates website, www.debates.org. Okay, here we are. Commission on Presidential Debates. Let's see. Is there a phone number, like she said, where we would be able to call and express our opinion? No, not on the homepage, but they do have a list of sponsors of the debate, the corporate sponsors. Let's see. We have Anheuser-Busch, the Century Foundation, 3Com, those are general debate sponsors. Then they have their internet sponsors, AT&T, Sun Microsystems, 3Com, Harris Interactive, whatever they do, but no phone number. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Contact the CPD, the Commission on Presidential Debates. Select the topic about which you wish to contact the CPD. If you prefer to contact us by mail, our address is 1200 New Hampshire Northwest, Box 445, Washington, D.C., 236. Still no phone number. Let's see the topic. So, debate watch or general question comment. Let's see debate watch. Okay. Click on that. Thank you for your interest in Debate Watch, a Commission on Presidential Debates voter education project. General information on the project may be found on this website on the Debate Watch page. Let's see what that looks like. So we click on that, and it is Welcome to Debate Watch 2000, and basically it is, here we go, to register your Debate Watch, contact our research center, and it gives a toll-free number, 888-864-9875, but that is, if Debate Watch is sponsored by the nonpartisan nonprofit Commission on Presidential Debates, first introduced in 1996, Debate Watch, let's just call this toll-free number and see if that's where we can leave our comment. Here we go.
You've reached the voicemail for Debate Watch 2000. We're either on the other line or away from the office at the moment. If you leave your name, number, and a brief explanation of what we can do to help, we'll get back with you as soon as possible. If you're trying to reach Diana Carlin, you can reach her in the office of the Dean of the Graduate School and International Programs. That number is 785-864-6161.
Well, I don't think that is the number where we can call to leave our comment. So we'll continue here with our search for where we can leave our comment. Still nothing there. All right, let's go back to contacting the CPD. Let's see. And we go back to select a topic. Well, general question comment, I suppose that falls into it. Wanting to make a comment about the lack of third-party participation in the debates, and the 15% guideline. Let's see. Here's the topics we can comment on. When and where will the debates be held? I don't think that's a comment. How and when was the CPD created? How is the CPD funded? How are candidates selected to participate in the presidential debates? Ah, that's what we wanted to see. Let's see. How are candidates selected to participate in the presidential debates? Now, hopefully there will be a number we can call here so that they can get public feedback. No, Commission on Presidential Debates nonpartisan candidate selection criteria for 2000 general election debate participation. Well, this is a very long, long, long amount of text that is basically explaining how they are excluding third-party candidates, that you need 15% of support in 5 major polls. It says the Commission on Presidential Debates will use an average of the following 5 polls to determine whether a candidate has 15% support. ABC News, Washington Post, CBS News, New York Times, NBC News, Wall Street Journal, CNN USA Today Gallup, Fox News Opinion Dynamics. Wow, that's an amazing media merger there. ABC News, Washington Post, CBS News, New York Times, NBC News, Wall Street Journal, CNN, USA Today, Gallup, Fox News Opinion Dynamics, but still no phone number where we can call to tell the Commission on Presidential Debates what we think about their guidelines. So I guess we have no choice. We've looked through their website. I guess we have to call information and see if we can find the Commission on Presidential Debates. Their mailing address is in Washington, D.C. Let's try that. 1212. All right. Let's see what they have to say at directory assistance on the issue. Here we go.
What city and state?
Washington, D.C.
What listing?
The Commission on Presidential Debates.
While the operator looks for that number.
Thank you.
Please hold for the first available operator who will assist you with that information. Your call is important to us. Please continue to hold while your call is processed.
Thank you.
The number is 202-872-1020. Repeat.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your help. Okay, let's try that number. Let's see. 1-202-872-1020. Okay, now we're getting somewhere here. It's not on the website, but through the wonders of modern technology, we are getting there. Hi, I'd like to make a comment about the Commission on Presidential Debates and the guidelines for candidates to participate.
One moment, I'll transfer you to our comment line.
Is there someone I can talk to personally?
The best way is to leave a comment on our comment line, sir.
Right, but I don't want to just talk to a machine. Is there someone that I could express my viewpoint to?
That's the best way to leave a comment. One moment.
But so there's no human being I can talk to?
Thank you for calling the Commission on Presidential Debates with your comments. All comments will be forwarded to the Commission's Executive Director, Janet Brown. Please leave your message after the tone.
And that is Jeremy Scahill's tour of the Commission on Presidential Debates website. Not easy to get that phone number. Ultimately, had to rely on, I guess it was Verizon. And by the way, Janet Brown, yesterday when we asked her what is the sentiment of the calls that are coming in to the Commission on Presidential Debates, she said she didn't know. They hadn't collated the comments. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! When we come back, we will talk to one of the people who was involved with the serving of Lee Peng with a lawsuit charging him with crimes against humanity. We'll also go to Venezuela to look at Hugo Chavez, who is making waves by going to Iraq and taking on U.S. companies like Ford and Firestone. You are listening to Democracy Now! Back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman with co-host Juan Gonzalez.
And good day to our listeners all around the country. And we're going to move right into a quick interview on a new lawsuit being prepared and over the Tiananmen Square massacres.
That's right. Five veterans of the 1989 Tiananmen Square democracy movement are suing Li Peng, the chair of the China's National People's Congress and federal court, for human rights abuses stemming from his role in the military crackdown that killed hundreds of civilians in Beijing. We turn now to Xiao Cheng, who is the executive director of Human Rights in China. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you, Amy.
I'm looking at a photograph of lawyers serving the federal lawsuit at the Waldorf Astoria last night to security personnel protecting Li Peng, and I see your picture. Can you tell us what happened, how this was served?
Well, it was yesterday, 6 o'clock in the morning, a professional server went to the Waldorf Hotel where Li Peng was still in sleep, went to the security personnel to give the summons and the complaint. According to the federal judge's order, the complaint need to give to the any U.S. Federal employees who is guarding Li Peng. So when the processor, the professional processor talking to the guards, and then the employee of security guard from federal agents came down to the stairs, and he identified himself as guarding Li Peng and signed and received the paper. So Li Peng was served yesterday, and I was there.
And in the suit alleges basically what?
There's a anti it's a crime against humanity complaint filed in the United States District Court, the Southern District of New York. It's based on Alien Tort Claim Act, which provides jurisdiction for torts committed in violation of the law of nations. That's including summary execution, torture, arbitrary detention, and a violation of rights to peacefully assembling and association, and the rights to life, liberty, and security of person. So Li Peng, we believe, committed all these crimes.
Can you tell us, Xiao Cheng, how exactly the Li Peng was served and it be considered legal? Because you weren't able to get to him. Generally in these lawsuits that the Center for Constitutional Rights is now famous for, like
That's
slapping
right.
the lawsuit on General Gramajo of Guatemala, the former defense minister, and others, they got him at Harvard Kennedy School graduation as he was walking in to get his diploma in his full graduation garb. But they didn't put it in the hands of Li Peng. Who did they put it in the hands of? Who the process
the
server?
A security guard provided by United States federal government who specifically guarding Li Peng. By doing that, it's according to what I learned from lawyer, and which they got a special court order from the judge that that is count as a service.
So, in other words, the federal judge Richard Casey specifically said that this would be allowable as a means of making the service effective.
I believe so.
Interesting that the summons was handed by this process server to an employee of the U.S. State Department guy that is who is guarding Li Peng. Your own personal involvement, Xiao Cheng. You're here in the United States. You're with Human Rights Watch. Human Rights in China, but. Were you at Tiananmen?
Well, I was studying in America already, but I went back to China 2 days after Tiananmen massacre. I saw my own brother and many of my friends were in Tiananmen, and when troops come in, I went back to China trying to help them. So back to 11 years ago, I was ready to do anything to fight against Li Peng, standing together with my brother and other brothers and sisters, the Chinese students in Tiananmen Square. But I'm very glad that 11 years later I had a chance to come back to him with the lawyer from Constitutional Rights.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Xiao Cheng, Executive Director of the New York-based Human Rights in China. Early yesterday morning, Li Peng was served with a lawsuit charging him with crimes against humanity. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Amy.
And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! As we move on to another significant story in the news today, federal authorities said yesterday 26 more U.S. traffic deaths for a total of 88 are under investigation in connection with recalled Firestone tires. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has received more than 1,400 complaints, including reports of the 88 deaths and more than 250 injuries since opening its investigation into Firestone tires that reportedly lose their tread, sometimes while traveling at highway speeds. We go now to Ralph Hoare, who is director of SafetyForum.com. He's a consultant with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Good morning. Actually, I'm not currently a consultant to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Have been previously.
Mm-hmm.
We work as consultants to safety attorneys and to insurance companies and others.
Well, Ralph Hoare, we've been seeing over the last few weeks an amazing situation of two major multinational companies going at each other's throats and trying to assess blame over this situation between Bridgestone Firestone and the Ford Motor Company. Can you tell us what your and now we're getting Venezuela saying that they are linking at least 28 deaths to problems, a combination of problems of both the Ford Explorer.
And we're yet to hear from the many other countries around the world where these vehicles and tires were sold. The finger pointing is unseemly and has been from the beginning. They begin by pointing the finger at their customers, and then they pointed fingers at Firestone's workers. And I guess as the heat got closer and closer to home, they decided that they would point fingers at each other. There's plenty of blame to go around here. And rather than point fingers, I think the primary concern needs to be to get all of these tires off the road. And by all of these tires, I mean all of the ATX, ATX2, and all of the Wilderness tires. You see, the current recall in the United States only consists of ATX and ATX2 tires, which haven't been made since the mid-90s. And the Wilderness tires, but only those made in Decatur. Now, that's just a fraction of the tires that are out there. What that allows Ford and Firestone to do is to, one, say that a significant portion of their Wilderness production is not defective, and to use those tires as replacement tires for the tires that are being recalled. When, in truth, there is not a bit of difference between the tires that are being recalled and the tires that are being used as replacements. The tires from Decatur certainly have a higher record of failure, but the tires from Wilson, North Carolina, and Joliet, Quebec, and other Firestone facilities already have a record of failure. Of the tires whose sources we can identify that have been reported to NHTSA, one-third of those tires come from facilities other than Decatur, the ones that are being recalled. Many of the lawsuits that have been brought since as early as 1992 involve tires that were made at facilities other than Decatur and involve tires that were other than the 15-inch tires that have been recalled. The current recall, the partial recall, does not include 16-inch tires. There are a significant number of failure injuries and lawsuits involving the tires that have not been recalled and indeed are now being used as replacement tires. It's a problem.
Well, we're also, in terms of the information coming out of Venezuela, we're being told by the consumer agency there in Venezuela that back as early as 98, Ford and Firestone were meeting over, and Ford recommended certain redesigns, an additional ply, a fifth ply added to the Bridgestone tires. And apparently Bridgestone started to manufacture tires with false fifth ply advertisements on the tire, even though they were still manufacturing them with four ply. And now the Venezuelan agency is recommending criminal charges be brought against some of the people involved. This seems to be spiraling, and as you say, Venezuela is only one country where these tires and where the Explorer was sold.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that the officials in Venezuela are blaming both Firestone and Ford, and both companies are culpable in this. The tires for the Explorer, which are the Wilderness tires, the tires that are being recalled and the tires that should be recalled, were built to Ford specifications specifically for the Explorer vehicle.
Now, it's interesting. Jacques Nasser, who is the Ford chief executive, has issued a vehement denial that the Ford Explorer is a factor that may have contributed to the Firestone tire failures. He's issuing this denial because Venezuelan officials are linking Ford, saying they're as responsible as Bridgestone Firestone, which will take us, Ralph Hoare, down right now to Venezuela.
Yes, and we're joined on the phone by Teodoro Petkov, who's the editor of the leading opposition paper in Venezuela. Welcome to Democracy Now, Mr. Petkov.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Could you tell us what the impact has been in your country of this scandal, of the tire and the Ford Explorer scandal, and why this recommendation of criminal charges?
Well, it has had a great impact because in Venezuela we have had many accidents in highways with the Explorers. So our Institute of Consumers, I don't know how to translate it into English, but it's the institute that has to do with consumers.
Consumer Protection Agency.
Consumers Protection Institute. Is putting his hands in the issue. And yesterday they announced that they will introduce charges against Firestone or against Ford because of that tires, as in some other countries, I understand.
That's right. It's very interesting that Venezuela is introducing criminal charges because, Ralph Hoare, with the recalls of the tires, criminal charges have not been the issue, and it's very rare in this country that a corporation gets charged, not with, you know, hits with a lawsuit, but with a criminal charge that could lead to executives being put in jail.
Well, I'm not, absolutely informed which are the charges, but
well, let's put
anyhow,
that question.
I'm not sure that in United States, for instance, people like Ralph Nader wouldn't introduce criminal charges,
right?
Because what is this exactly? But what are we talking about? It's not a criminal procedure that to have tires with that are out of order. We have had death in the highways. Is that criminal or not?
Well, Ralph Hoare, you have represented work with the Trial Lawyers Association. What about that? A criminal charge is being brought.
Actually, I had a friend from Venezuela mentioned Ralph Nader, and Ralph Nader has, in fact, urged that criminal penalties be added to the federal motor vehicle safety law. That was considered early on in the law and rejected, and I think unfortunately, because the only pressure on most executive decisions in corporations is how this decision is going to affect the bottom line. We see this time and time again. And if the individual executives who are called on to make these decisions were more conscious of their own personal responsibility in these decisions to a society more than just to a corporate bottom line, I think we'd see more accountable decisions being made.
Well, I want to thank you, Ralph Hoare, for being with us. You've got a very interesting website, all the information you'd ever want to know about Firestone, Bridgestone, and Ford. It's the website is called safetyforum.com. Ralph Hoare is its director. And we're going to stay on the line after our break with Teodoro Petkoff, editor of the leading opposition paper in Venezuela, Talchul, to talk about how, well, this is one example, the Venezuelan government taking on a U.S. corporation. But the Venezuelan president, Hugo Chavez, has been taking on the U.S. administration in all sorts of ways, not the least of which was going to Baghdad, Iraq, in the last week. We are here on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we continue with our guest, Teodoro Petkoff, editor of the leading opposition paper in Venezuela. He was also the Minister of Planning in the former government of Dr. Caldera. He joins us from Caracas. Juan?
Yes, and we're going to continue by broadening the discussion about Venezuela in general. This move by the government of Venezuela around the Ford Explorer and Firestone tire scandal is only the latest action by the administration of President Hugo Chavez that has put him at odds with either the United States or some of its corporations. Just a few weeks ago, Chavez traveled to Iraq as part of a tour of OPEC nations. He became the first head of state to pay an official visit to Baghdad since the Gulf War. The U.S. reacted sharply to his visit, and I'd like to ask Mr. Teodoro Petkoff, the editor of the leading opposition paper, what was the reaction in your country to President Chavez's visit?
Will you permit me some minutes to make an additional commentary about the Firestone issue?
Oh, yes. Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, because it's not fair to say that the government of Venezuela took actions against an U.S. corporation. No, that's not fair. Excuse me. But the problem is not that it is an U.S. corporation. The problem is that, like in many other countries, including United States, Firestone and Ford are under accusations because the tires. It's not only in Venezuela that an anti-imperialist government is acting against her. Excuse me, sir, but that's not fair to say that. There is a problem. in our highways, some people died because of the fires, as in some other countries, including United States, has been shown. And I'm sure that in United States, the actions against Ford and against Firestone are much more sharper than in our country. So I think your statement is somehow biased. Prejudices.
Mr. Petkoff, I wasn't trying to suggest that Venezuela had done anything wrong. And rather, all I'm saying is that Venezuela has taken the lead in at least recommending the possibility of criminal charges against some of the corporate officers, and some in this country would consider that admirable. I'm just suggesting that in this sense you've taken the lead in this area, but certainly there are problems all around the world and in the United States.
Yeah, I know that's all around the world, but we are going to talk about Iraq and Libya and OPEC, and before that, the presentation says that the Venezuelan government is acting against the U.S. Corporation. And that's not a problem. In fact, Bridgestone is not from U.S., it's from U.K.
Okay, well, thank you for that clarification. Could you tell us now about the visit to the Middle East of President Chavez?
Gladly. Well, you know, Venezuela is a member of OPEC. In fact, it was a Venezuelan initiative that created OPEC 40 years ago. And the government of Venezuela called a meeting of OPEC presidents and kings and sheikhs in September, right now, in 2 or 3 weeks more. And the president of Venezuela, well, let me say some other thing. You know, I would say that OPEC is the most important international interest of Venezuela. Venezuela is a member of that club of oil-producing countries. And I would say that OPEC is the only successful cartel that the third world has created in history, because all other cartels, excepting cocaine cartel, are from developed world. So that meeting, it's very important. I think the last meeting of OPEC was in 1975, and the world has changed very much. There is no United Soviet Union. Now there is another world, possibilities of cooperation between OPEC countries and non-OPEC countries, and consumer countries and OPEC are greater than ever before. So I think it's right to examine what's going on in the world. And so the idea of calling a meeting of OPEC countries is, I consider it right. So the president of Venezuela, the government that has had the initiative to call that meeting, went to OPEC countries. And, you know, among OPEC countries are Iraq and Libya. And it wouldn't be understandable that the president of Venezuela went to all the other OPEC countries with the exceptions of Iraq and Libya, because Venezuela has diplomatic relations with Iraq and Libya from many years before Chavez became president of the country. So nobody would understand that Chavez would go to OPEC countries with the exceptions of Iraq and Libya. So I, from my point of view, it was right to go to Iraq and Libya, because we have no quarrels with Iraq and Libya. Venezuela has diplomatic relations, never had a problem with Iraq or Libya. So I say the president of Venezuela that visited emirs and sheikhs in Arabia or on the Gulf Emirates, or went to Indonesia, or went to Algeria, well, why not Iraq and Libya? Why not? The only reason is that the governments of Iraq and Libya, are enemies, or United States is enemy of that government. But that's not a reason for us, for Venezuela. So why not? I think that Venezuela is not obliged to buy the enemies of the United States. The United States has its own reasons. I understand them. But that's the government of the United States. If the government of the United States doesn't want to go to Iraq and Libya, okay, fine. But why the government of Venezuela would take the same attitude as the government of the United States? No, I think it's not... I'm not in accord with, as you said it before, our newspaper is an opposition newspaper. But in this case, I understand the government of Venezuela.
Let me ask you about another issue that has drawn a lot of attention in recent days in the United States, the huge American aid package to President Andres Pastrana and the government of Colombia in its war against drugs. Some of the neighbors of Colombia have expressed concerns that this is going to escalate the civil war in Colombia. What's been the reaction in Venezuela, and is there a fear that increasing U.S. involvement, even by U.S. military in Colombia, could conceivably become a threat to Venezuela itself and the peaceful revolution that the Venezuelan people are involved in right now?
Yeah, I share that concern. And it's a concern that was expressed not only by Chavez, also by Cardoso, by Fujimori, and by Noboa in Ecuador, in Peru, in Brazil, and in Venezuela.
In fact,
it's easy to understand that concern. I share it, and it's easy to understand it. Because if the war escalates in Colombia, well, people from Colombia will come to Venezuela. And thousands of people will come. In fact, today, we have 500, how you say it in English, desplazados, what we say in...
Displaced.
Displaced people. Mm-hmm. Today, we have 500 people displaced that came into our country. If the war escalates, well, we will have thousands and thousands of people coming from Colombia into Venezuela. But there are some other problems. The possibility that drug lords will displace their business from Colombia into Venezuela or into Brazil or into Peru or into Ecuador. So we are asking ourselves, well, why? The fight against drugs is in all countries in the world a police problem. You fight against drugs in the United States with DEA, or with CIA. So why in Colombia it's necessary to fight drugs with the military? Why? In the United States or in Europe, that's a police problem. And in Colombia and in Venezuela, it's a police problem. Now it is being transformed in a military problem. 80% of the aid for Colombia is to be spent in the military material. So, 60 helicopters, Black Hawks, in Latin America, in all these South American countries, there are no 60 Black Hawks. Now, we will have 60 Black Hawks to fight drugs or to fight guerrillas. Which is the aim of the Colombia plan? Which, drugs or guerrillas? Because if it is guerrillas, we are in face of a political problem. And I think that if war escalates against guerrillas, the peace plan of President Pastrana goes to hell. There will be no more peace plan. We will have war. And if we have war, I can remember Vietnam or Nicaragua or Salvador. All Central America was involved in the war. In Nicaragua, or in the war in Salvador. So if we have war in Colombia, a big war, a bigger war, even with the intervention of North American soldiers, so far we have a North American general that will be in Colombia. But later, we know how it began in Vietnam. First, trainers or, you know, people that was only seeing. And later, there was half a million American soldiers in Vietnam. So, which is the future? I think we are absolutely right being concerned about by the development of the Colombia, of the Plan Colombia, because well, you know, when the war begins, you don't know when it will finish and how will it finish. I think President Pastrana is riding a tiger, really, in this problem. The way he began to manage the problems, the war, looking for a peace agreement with the guerrilla, was right. But now, I don't know. I think the idea changed, and the idea now is war. Well, if it is war, the war will come to our country also.
We're talking
to, very dangerous.
We're talking to Teodoro Petkov, who is the editor of the opposition paper in Venezuela, Tal Tiol. This as the leaders, South American presidents, opened a conference in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, stressing their support for Colombia while expressing deep concern about the possible Vietnamization of the four-decade-old civil war or spillover of the conflict into neighboring countries like his in Venezuela. As we wrap up the program, Teodoro Petkov, I wanted to ask you if you are concerned about this latest news as well, since Chavez has just returned from Iraq, about the United States alerting an Army Patriot anti-missile battery for possible deployment in Israel. The unannounced action was taken in response to concerns. The U.S. government, undisclosed sources say, that Iraq could try to fire ballistic missiles at Israel. This in our election season.
Well, I think it's another problem. It's absolutely another issue. It doesn't have nothing to do with the OPEC meeting in September here in Caracas. Iraq is member of OPEC. Libya also is member of OPEC. Any other problem like that is out of order, out of the agenda of the meeting in Caracas. Iraq will come, of course, not Hussein, but the government of Iraq will send some representatives to the meeting. And Libya also. Gaddafi is not coming, of course. But all the other governments will come. Presidents, Bouteflika of Algeria, President Wahid of Indonesia, all the emirs of the Gulf countries will come. A very high representative of the King of Arabia will be here. So our problem is OPEC, not the Middle East problems. That's not our problem.
Well, Teodoro
Petkov, it's a problem of the world, and of course, it's a problem for us also as members of the United Nations and so on.
But on that note, we have to end this conversation because we've come to the end of our program. Teodoro Petkov, editor of Tal Tiol, the leading opposition paper in Venezuela, and we will certainly continue to follow that story. People very concerned in this presidential election season about the United States once again escalating the bombing raids against Iraq. And that does it for today's program. Go to our website for more information and for the show if you'd like to listen to it online, www.democracynow.org. From the studios of WBAI in New York, Jeremy Scahill, our producer, Matthew Finch, our engineer, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for listening.